Good morning.
Good morning.
And thanks for coming. And up the mountain and down the hill to support each other in this practice. I'm very grateful for the effort that you've made to be here today. I had prepared a talk for today, which I've changed. I visited my daughter in Oakland this past week, and she reminded me that it was Father's Day today. And I've forgotten. And she also reminded me that she has had a lot of trouble with Father's Day, because she's had a few fathers. And her biological father sort of disappeared when we were divorced, when she was two, and never reappeared in her life until she was 40, when she decided she would find him. And she did find him in the Bahamas, sailing around the world. And they have a pretty good connection now. But she still feels that he's pretty much a stranger. And of course, there have been other candidates for the role in her life, none of whom seemed quite authentic. So she's had a bit of a difficult time with Father's Day. And I asked her, when she thinks about fathers, what are her thoughts? And she said two very interesting things. The first thing she said was that there are many fathers, but if you're lucky enough to find a good one, cherish him and appreciate him, because they're rare. And the second thing she said was that there are many fathers, but there aren't many dads. My daughter has been my teacher for many, many years. These were very profound statements. And that led me to considering the distinction between a father and a dad, or you could say a father and a good father. And I got to thinking about Dogen's term Roshin, which is parental mind. It's one of three minds that he values very deeply. These minds appear in the Tenzo Kyokun, Instructions to the Cook, oddly. The cook was a very significant figure for Dogen, and is a very significant figure in monastic life and in life generally. The first mind is Joshin, which is joyful mind, which is how we approach our roles, our positions in life, our interrelationships and our interpersonal dynamics, with a kind of lightness and vitality. Joshin, joyful mind. And Daishin, great mind, magnanimous mind, big spacious mind, open and generous mind. And then Roshin, which is parental mind. Roshin is the mind or attitude of a parent. A parent, irrespective of poverty or difficult circumstances, loves and raises a child with care. This is Dogen speaking. How deep is a love like this? Only a parent can understand it. Only a person in whose mind this has arisen can understand it. And only one in whom this attitude has become second nature can fully realize it. This is the ultimate in being a parent. In this same manner, when you handle water, rice, or anything else, you must have the affectionate and caring concern of a parent raising a child. So parental mind, fatherly mind, motherly mind, the mind of a dad, affectionate, caring, gentle. When I think of such a parent, particularly a father, I have three very strong images. The first image of a father, a good father, that I have is of this tall, strong being who is bending over this smaller being, this child, and protecting. It's like a big shade tree. And I see men and children often in this position. The father kind of bending over and just kind of protecting like a big tree. It's a very strong image for me. Bending. Not like this, but soft. Like I was interested to learn that actually all the strongest trees are softwoods. The hardwoods, the really powerful mahoganies and walnuts, and they easily break under the stress of conditions. But the most long-lived trees are the mistletoe pines and the soft trees, the ones that bend. Really wonderful, wonderful thoughts. So that's my first image. My second image of a good father is someone who has his arms outstretched and brings this small being onto his lap. Holds this being. Not about hugging so much, but about comforting, maybe. Just, it's going to be all right. Just, you know, sit here with me. Sit here in my embrace. And the third image that I have is of a father lifting a child up and placing the child on his shoulders, carrying the child wrapped up there, which is about, for me, it's about getting a panoramic view of things. It's about wisdom in a way. It's about let's see what things look like from up here. And it's also about inspiration. It's like, So protection, comfort, confidence, and inspiration. In our practice, we speak of compassion and wisdom. Those two, compassion and wisdom. My father never assumed any of those postures. I sometimes think that my father died before I was born, in the sense of being a dad. My brother and I have this little game that we play when we get together. It's almost a little ritual. And we try to think of one thing that my father ever did with us. And we can't come up with anything. And this has been going on for quite a while. Okay, Mitch, did you think of anything? No. How about you, Madam? No, I can't think of a thing. But we have a very long list of things that he never did do with us. He never took us to a movie. He never read us a story. He never went to see our teachers. He never went to a sports event that we were involved in. He never told us he loved us. On and on and on. And so many of us, and I know I can speak for myself, it's almost a cliche to say that many of us go through our lives looking for the parent we didn't have, or the parent who we wished was a bit different from the one we had. And we keep trying to come to a better outcome. And so we tend to be drawn to people who resemble the parent who wasn't quite who we hoped he or she would be. And trying to fix it, make it better, make it different. And of course, this is futile. We keep running into walls. My father, before I was born, was drafted and suffered a nervous breakdown in the army. He was damaged very deeply, and he spent most of his life obsessed with power. And because he was poor and without any resources, no education, he sought power in money. And he was obsessed with making money. And because he had no resources and no savvy in the conventional world, he learned how to make money let's say, in unconventional ways. Some people would call him a crook. And this is hard for me to admit to you. It's hard for me to acknowledge this. But at the end of my father's life, the job that he had was working in a pornographic bookstore. And people ask me, you know, what did your father do? Acknowledge that. Power. In whatever way he could find it, was what he was after. And a friend of mine knew that I was going to speak about fathers today, and he gave me this image. The fit dad issue. This is what it means to be a fit dad these days. But what is all this about? It's really about power, isn't it? It's about the incarnation of power in muscle, where in my father's case it was an incarnation of power in money. And these aren't terribly great options for men. in exercising power, which is something men have. It's wonderful, great power. But there's power in bending. There's power in embracing. And there's power in uplifting. This is what young people are being shown, and men are being shown as what it means to be fit, to be a fit dad. And my dad was a victim of that as well. A couple of years ago, my dad died 8 years ago. And my mom died 2 years ago. And when she did, I was chanting over her bedside. And I was chanting the names of our ancestors, which we commonly do, long list of ancestors. Actually, they're all men. And I know there is a women's lineage, which I have to get from you sometime. You have it hidden somewhere. And it looks very different from the male lineage. It's a circle. It's not one of these powerful rectangle things. Linear. But anyway.
I think it's in the book, actually.
Okay. Oh, maybe. I haven't seen it. Anyway.
This is a power thing.
Yeah, it's a power thing. Yes. So I was chanting the names of our ancestors, the patriarchs, and I had one of these aha moments about my dad, my father. And I'm calling him dad now. Isn't that interesting? Because he has become a dad. And my aha moment was, I have to add my dad to this lineage. That's the only way I'm going to come to resolve about him. And so I gave him a Dharma name. And his name was Roshan. parental mind. Roshan Sal Lax Dio Show. Roshan Sal Lax Dio Show. And I silently chant that name every time I chant the lineage. It had nothing, it has nothing to do with forgiveness. Because I really don't forgive my dad. I hold him accountable. But what I have been able to do is to sacralize him, which is much more powerful and important than forgiveness. Actually, I was able to lift him up, which he was unable to do for me. But I lifted him up and put him in the Dharma. And made him sacred. This is kind of, this is what, you know, we speak about in our practice, the lotus blossom growing out of the mud. And Buddha, Buddha's robe is made out of all discarded and, you might say, defiled materials. Cloth that was chewed by an ox, funeral shrouds, menstrual cloth. I mean, Buddha went around gathering all these materials that had been abandoned and discarded and useless. Not only useless, but kind of disgusting. And he sacralized it. He sewed these materials into a sacred cloth. We have to do that. It's our practice to do that with everything. Instructions to the cook. Wilted greens. Lift it up. Thich Nhat Hanh has some very beautiful guided meditations for coming into a fullness with a difficult parent or parents. And he often recommends that when you sit to meditate, and you are constricted and contracted around anger, resentment, guilt, whatever it is that you're holding in contracted way with a parent or parents, that you imagine that parent as a 5-year-old child. You know, picture of your parent as a 5-year-old child and seeing in that parent's face the way he or she might have suffered. And in seeing that, your heart opens in compassion. This, you become a kind of parent with that 5-year-old child who was your parent. My dad came from a really poor family, one of 4 boys, and he spent most of his childhood, as he told it, collecting coals, abandoned coal, from the docks on the Lower East Side of New York to keep the family warm. So I don't have any pictures of my father as a 5-year-old child. I have no idea what he looked like. They were too poor to have a camera, to have their picture taken. But I do have some pictures of myself as a 5-year-old child. And my father is in some of them. And in some of them, I'm smiling. So I have invited a Bodhidharma, one of our ancestors, to join us today, as well as this guy. Where did he go? But this is one of my many spiritual fathers, which is ultimately what we're looking for. So what about you? And your fathers and your dads. Can we just, we typically begin our gathering together with introducing ourselves, but I'd like to sort of end, sort of move toward lunch with introducing yourself, but also naming your father and bringing your father's presence into our circle. So can we, and if there's something that you feel moved to say, please feel free to do that. So let's go around.
I'm Scott, and my father's name is Fred. Last night we ate at Fondue Fred, kind of couldn't be with him. He's back in Nebraska, and he's a good dad, and we get to go see him in a couple weeks. Okay.
My name's Leanna. My dad is Scott. I really like him. He's an awesome dad.
But if you didn't hear that, she said, he is an awesome dad. Let's see your muscles.
It didn't look like that on a table show.
I have a barrel chest. It's not quite a stair hat. It's pretty stressful.
Thank you.
My name is Eugene, and my father's name is Ernie.
Anatoly.
Can you say that a little louder?
His name is Anatoly.
Anatoly?
Hi, I'm Scott, and my father's name was Luther.
Hey, my name's Wayne, and my father's name was Wesley Carroll. And I particularly was intrigued by the notion of sacralizing. I'm not sure I agree, but I find it very, very interesting. You know, maybe a way to transcend or, you know, to change that. So I really like the idea.
Okay. My name is Corey, and my father's name was Mitch.
My name is Ben, and my father's name is Eric.
And my name is Kim, and my dad's name was Frank.
My name is Paula, and my dad's name was William, and I think he got very badly damaged in World War II as well.
Mm-hmm. My name's Mark, and my father's name was Vernon. He died about 5 years ago, and he was a good dad, and I miss him.
Mm-hmm. My name is Gonzalo, and my father's name is Ivan. And thank you for the Dharma talk and the previous conversations that we had about fathers in this last couple of days.
I'm John, and his name was John.
My name's William, and my dad's name was William also. Thank you, Dad, for the name. And he's been gone about 30 years now, and I miss him more every year. He's a good dad. A little obsessed with obtaining security in his life, you know. But those are the times. Thank you.
I'm Reinhard. My dad's name was Karl Heinz, and he died 26 years ago, and I still think of him every day. And he was awesome, too.
My name's Chris, and my dad's name was Marvin.
My name's Marie. My dad's name is John, and I called him yesterday and said, I'm calling you today because tomorrow's Father's Day, and I will be at Jokoji Zen Meditation Center, and there's no there's no phone reception, which was one more interesting conversation we've had out of millions in our lives.
My name's Doug. My father, George, passed away nearly 50 years ago, and he was a good guy.
My name is Todd. My father's name was Charles. I called him Dad. I'm also a dad, twice.
I'm Judy. My father's name was Bonner. He was what you would have wanted. I really look up to him.
My name is Cliff. My father was also called Cliff, and he died 58 years ago. So mostly I'm appalled at how little I was able to relate to him at my young age.
My name is Mike, and my father's name was Jim, James, and he was also an awesome dad.
Okay. They're all here with us. You said you don't know whether you quite buy this sacralizing
right.
act. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Well, I mean, it's just, I have issues about whether, making sacred is a kind of a, avoidance of there is a, is a type of, I guess, symbolizing or something. So, for me, it's raising things up to, it's like raising them up, I guess, in a godlike or in a symbol way. I think of sort of even in, either Christianity or Hebrew religion, where not have any sacred images, which I always thought not that I'm in agreement with Christianity or Hebrewism, but I thought that was an element that of key insight, that the image of the deity is not the thing, and so that's kind of my I'm always leery of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's very intriguing that I think I get that by you doing it, you somehow sort of transcended, this sort of, your negative experience of your of your father, it's as a kind of a way of like forgiveness, or it's a way to be compassionate, or you know. So that's so I so in my mind, I have I'm just aware that I have these, you know, dissonant things about it, but without necessarily passing judgment about whether it's good or good or bad or whatever. And so, but it is intriguing, and I'm going, oh, well, maybe, you know, that's what I need to do in some of the things that I have similar difficulties with, you know. So. So that's why I mentioned it. I was sort of struck by it. I thought there's some real wisdom there.
Yeah, it's a kind of unusual act because in a way it isn't glorifying him,
right.
And it isn't making him into one of these superheroes.
Right.
And I'm not kind of glossing over what I hold him accountable for. But you might say that I'm putting him in better company.
Yes.
I mean, he is surrounded by this vast array of Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, enlightened beings and patriarchs. So what do they, sometimes in our practice we say, if you take a little teaspoon of salt and you put it in a shot glass, the water is going to taste very salty.
Right.
But if you take that same teaspoon of salt and you put it in the ocean, it's not going to have the same taste.
Right.
So placing my father in the ocean of the Dharma is where he belongs.
Yeah, right.
And because I can see him there and experience him there with all of the other awakened beings, he is transformed.
Right.
Just as we all are moving in that direction.
Right.
So it's not about, you know, avoidance, really, trying to make him something that he isn't, but actually making him something that he really is, but never quite managed it. Which is something I can probably say for myself.
In Japan, it was very insightful to go to Japan and find out a different relationship to ancestors, not just your father, but your whole kind of lineage, your whole blood lineage. Coming from the West, I had there's no kind of formal way that was expressed. Other than maybe going to the cemetery Memorial Day or something like that, or visiting a grave. So in each home they have a separate shrine that's the family ancestors shrine, and there's pictures of the father and the mother and their grandfather and the family. And of course since most that I saw are Buddhist, I think there's probably a Christian variant in Japan as well, others. But there'll be a statue of a Buddha, and there'll be other, you know, from the lineage. So like your ocean metaphor. You know. So it's kind of inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
But what was important to me was that they had it in the home. There was an actual place where you could go and say, "I remember you," with a picture, and offer some incense. So I've actually adopted that.
Mm-hmm.
I have a shrine that's just for my family. It's a really nice practice, actually.
Mm-hmm.
A little unusual for us in the West.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
Thanks.
Right. So I just want to share a thought that I've been having along this same theme for quite a while now, is
how remarkable it is that the human race does actually progress. When you come out of, I mean, my own, you don't need to know the story, but it's not a very good one either. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and yet I'm watching, I come from a lecture, I'm watching my siblings raise these kids, and they're all just raising these amazing kids.
Mm.
And I'm just like, wow, how is this? It's the image of the lotus flower. And I just think it's just stunning. So, I think of it.
Yeah, and again, this way of transformation here is, you know, this deep gratitude for this lineage, and we are part of it. We are this way of transformation and keeping the light of this way bright and shining. And if not for them, not me. If not for them, not the Dharma. It keeps going and becoming more and more realized. So, what was that? I can never pronounce the Chinese names in Dogen's Shobo Genzo. At the end, he speaks about is it Dongsheng with the fan? He says, "Well, if the wind is everywhere, why do we have to use a fan?" And the response is, if you don't really understand what it means for the wind to blow everywhere, then you will ask that question. But if you really understand what it means for the wind to be blowing everywhere, you will naturally want to use a fan. So it is. The Dharma is everywhere. This transformative practice is everywhere. It's open to everyone, and yet we have to practice. We have to enact it. So we really understand it. It's not. It's your siblings aren't just doing this by accident. They're waving that fan. Even though the children may grow up quite nicely, you know, and find their own way, you still got to wave the fan. So deep gratitude for our ancestors, our fathers, mothers, for you, for showing up and sharing this day. Please join us for lunch. Mm-hmm.